Good morning. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to come before you this morning. I would like to greet each of you in the name of our loving Savior, Jesus Christ. And I would like to also greet all those who are online. Welcome. This probably sounds like a funny thing to say. I really appreciate the message this morning. And I appreciate the opportunity to share it with you and to ponder the meaning of it to us. If I would title the sermon, I would call it Christmas Present. It's not a singular meaning. It can be taken a couple different ways, but I'll start with Christmas present, meaning, pardon me, my screen went dark. I didn't have time to sit and write down my thoughts, and so wherever I was, I would throw them in my phone this week. So I'm going to be using my phone. I'm actually not just trying to text with my brothers elsewhere or something, you know. I'm going to start with Christmas present, God's greatest gift in the form of His Son. Let's start with that meaning first. The Christmas present, the gift from God, God's only Son. I'm going to start in the second chapter of Luke, a familiar reading. I'm going to start reading with the first verse. And before I start reading, I wanted to say it's kind of a neat coincidence this morning. I just came from the phone church meeting, and I mean, it just ended just moments ago because it was a long one. We had our Christmas program this morning, and everybody brings their family offerings for the Christmas program, and so it was lengthy and it was beautiful. But one of the offerings, our sister Carol Hoffman from down in, you know, it's either Mississippi or Louisiana. I'm not sure exactly where she's at, but she read the first verse of our first song. She said that it was something she had a memory of from her childhood and that she'd actually never heard it sung in the Church of Christ. And so I thought it was so cool to come up here, and it's the first song we sing. There's a song in the air. There's a star in the sky. Luke 2, starting with the first verse, I'm going to read through verse 20. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in their fields, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. and this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen as it was told unto them. You know, I consider that scene years ago, the scene of Mary and Joseph coming into Bethlehem to pay their taxes. I think of the situation that Joseph and Mary were in, the awesome responsibility that they had taken on, the grace, should I say, of Joseph. Him not being the actual father, this was even a threatening situation in that day. And yet, he chose to stay around, to take care of Mary, to take care of Jesus, the little baby, to be an earthly father to Jesus. I think of Mary also being a first-time mother. That's different. It's different when you've not experienced it before. Everything's new. Everything's different. I think of the angels. I think of the shepherds. You know, it's funny that such an important event, the most important event to us of history, of all time. And the angels didn't come to the kings. They didn't come to the princes. They came to the shepherds in the fields, came to the humble, the poor, and brought a message that bring of good tidings of great joy, which should be to all people. And I think of that brotherhood that sometimes we don't think that extensively about. The brotherhood of God's creation. I think sometimes it's easier to think of the brotherhood of the four walls of church or including our family or whatever. But let's consider that this good news, this great tidings of our good tidings of great joy was to all people, was to all people. I don't know that Jesus had this greatly outstanding small childhood. It doesn't really say much about it. It tells how he was born in a very humble way. He was born and they laid him in a manger. Growing up, I've seen many, many nativity scenes and been in little plays and played the shepherd, you know. And I think one time I played Joseph, but we always had a little wooden rick that had hay in it, you know, to lay the baby in. But historically, it was more commonly a stone box, carved out of stone, that was full of hay to feed the sheep, to feed the cattle or whatever were around. That's how he was born. And I always think also of, he was born in a stable, and I tend to think of that more like a shack, you know. A shack that's kind of a shelter for the animals and stuff. But again, historically, there's a great chance it was probably more like the entrance to a cave. I'm going to read out of Hebrews, 5th chapter and the 8th verse. Just kind of trying to think about Jesus' life here on earth and the few things it tells us about him growing up. Hebrews 5th chapter, I'm going to start with the 8th verse. I'll read through I'll read through verse 14, or probably, I wrote it down wrong, but let me start with the 8th verse. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all that obey him, called of God a high priest, after the order of Melchizedek. And I think that's exactly what I intended to read. I just wrote it down wrong. It doesn't, you know, I've heard people hypothesize about what did it mean by he learned by the things that he suffered. And I'm not gonna try to explain it more. It does say that he was tempted as we are, and yet without sin. I've heard people guess that he had to learn by doing things the wrong way the first time, just like you and I do. You know, he learned to walk falling down. Part of development on this earth, in this human body. I'm just going to jump through, and I'm not going to try to explain all of his life, but let's go again back to Luke 2. And this time, I'm going to read verse 42 to 52. It says, and when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they supposed him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, how is it that ye sought me? Wouldst ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth. It was subject unto them. But this mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. You know, I think about this situation. I think of the responsibility that Joseph and Mary must have felt. It brings back to my memory the other side of the story that Caleb sometimes tells. He said he will tell you sometimes when he's being funny that he was raised by wolves. Caleb is my eldest son, you know. The true story is Amy had an award assembly at the end of her softball season. Amy, my oldest daughter, Amy Moser now. But we went to this ceremony, and so there was these big bleachers all full of people, and they were giving out all these awards to the different teams. I couldn't be there on time because I was coming from work in Kansas City. So I arrived directly from work, and Cindy and Jeremiah and Susie, they were already there. So when I arrived, I went inside and I found them. I spotted them in the bleachers and we sat together and we watched the ceremony. And I got to describe, this is a big school. It's a rural school, but the territory was enormous. There were so many kids there, so many cars everywhere. The parking lot was absolutely full, and all the surrounding streets were full of cars and just a crowd everywhere. But we finished the ceremony and we left, and as we were leaving, I went by the van first that Cindy was driving and said bye, and I think it was Amy that wanted to go ride with me. And so I took Amy with me, and they left, and I hadn't had supper or anything, so I took Amy with me, and I got some supper and had some shopping I needed to do. And just long story short, it probably took me another couple hours to get home. And I got home, and it was, I think, between 10 and... Whenever I tell a story, my wife disagrees. But the nice thing is, I'm kind of deaf as a post, and so I don't hear a lot of it. What were you saying? Okay, 9 o'clock, way after dark. Yeah. So it was 9 o'clock or later, and I got home, and I hadn't been home very long when I said to Cindy, I'd been looking around, and I said, "Where's my little man?" And she goes, "Very funny." I said, "No, I'm dead serious." I said, where's Caleb? And she said, "He's with you." And immediately, my brain is looking at this whole area of town completely full of cars, people everywhere, and somewhere, there's a 3-year-old being raised by wolves. Well, so I think of this trip back, this trip back to Jerusalem, because their child was missing. The bridge was out between our house and Odessa. What was normally about a 4-mile trip was more like 8.5 miles. To get around where the bridge was out. And on gravel at 80 miles an hour, it didn't take me all that long, but man, you know, I always wondered, I always wanted to be a little bit more demonstrative. of God's goodness. I wanted to be a little more unashamed of when I offer my prayers. They were, for the most part, little silent prayers when I would eat my lunch at work and so forth. But driving to Odessa on the gravel road, I was screaming prayer to the top of my lungs. I was desperate and afraid. And I kind of identify. It doesn't say they were desperate and afraid. But I'm telling you, I'm reading it to it in the story. Where's my child? It says, after 3 days, where's my child? So it's no wonder that their mind didn't necessarily comprehend when he said, well, didn't you know I got to be about my father's business? Their mind was going everywhere in the world like, why didn't you find us? Why didn't you tell us? So, how are you here without us? But sorry for the digression. I identify it might have been hard to be the parents of Jesus. He learned obedience by the things that he suffered. He probably, out of this, learned to communicate with them maybe a little bit better. Who knows what all that means. But I identify, I think, with Joseph and with Mary. And I do want to assure you that Caleb actually wasn't raised by wolves. And when I got to town, we did actually find him. He was off in the dark on a swing set all by himself, and a school board meeting was going on. And the superintendent of schools came out of the central office and found this 3-year-old on the swing set crying, you know. No wolves present, but yeah, we found him. I just read to you Hebrews 5th chapter and the 8th through the 10th verses. And it says that Jesus grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. So let me read out of, Luke 42 to 52. John, I want to go to John and read out of the 2nd chapter. And here in the 2nd chapter of John, I'm going to read starting with the first verse. I'm going to read through verse 11. This is about the first recorded miracle that Jesus did. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone. After the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. And if I understand this right, it's like 27 gallons or something. A firkin is actually quite a bit that are in these water pots. And Jesus said unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, But the servants, which drew the water, knew. The governor of the feast called the bridegroom and said unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when the men have well drunk, then that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. And reading comments of the scholars, when Jesus said, "It's not yet my time," he was probably referring more to the fact that he had not really revealed his power. He hadn't really shown miracles up until that time. And yet his mother asked it of him, and so he did it. One of the things that I have discovered, I sat here as a little boy in the congregation in Independence. I've sat here as a grown man. I've read repeatedly about Christ's life and the things that he taught. And when I hear the scriptures quoted, I learn a lot about what he was teaching. But when I read it myself in context, it is the coolest story. All the things that, it's like reading a book. I wonder why. It's like reading a book. The story is actually there, and it gives the meaning of his commandments. It gives the meaning of his teachings and the example that he set. You actually get to read through it and see it. And it's wonderful. I remember one time we were in a Bible study at my house, and somebody said just the very thing that goes through my heart when I'm reading so many times, and I've been through it. But it was about the occasion where Jesus healed a blind person, and it was in a crowd, and the Pharisees sought him to take him prisoner and to kill him. They sought Jesus that way, and they did it constantly. He messed up their system. He was messing with their power, their personal power in the Jewish tradition, and they wanted to stop him. They didn't want this. And so here he did this miracle, and they found him. And so they went to grab him, and it said that he just walked into them and was lost in the crowd. And you, these things add to the story. And one of the people sitting there reading this said, "Man, I don't remember this." But it's so cool, if you read through the New Testament, to actually get the whole story that's recorded about Jesus' life. And I would encourage you to do that. My favorite way to do it, I usually tend to start with John 1:1, St. John, and read through that way, and then I go back and read Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In spite of Jesus being Jesus, I think it's important to reflect on the fact that he also needed to be baptized. And he knew that. And he requested it. He began his ministry when he was about 30 years old. And there's an instance, it's recorded in John, the 8th chapter, that starts to introduce the other side of what I want to talk about today, John, 8th chapter. Verse. They were constantly questioning Jesus. And as he would try to teach, they would question the accuracy of the things he would say. And on this occasion, I'm not going to go into everything that was said, except that he recognized what went on with Abraham. And they said, you know, you're not even 50 years old. You know, Abraham passed away a long time ago. How can you say this like you were there? And Jesus said, verse 58, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. I am. And that's really what brings me to the other meaning when I said Christmas present. I first talked about the fact that he is the world's greatest present, the Son of God, the Son of God. But the other side of it is Christmas present. Christmas, this moment. Christ at all times, present, near, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. I had a friend, his name was Levente Szabo. He grew up in Budapest. If I would describe his overwhelming characteristic, it was the smile. He was always smiling. Every time he saw you again, even if he'd just seen you earlier that day, he was like, hello! And he'd call you by name, and he'd say, Merry Christmas. And he said it year-round. It was just part of who he was. One time I asked him about it, and he just sat quietly for a while, and he said, well, it makes me happy. Does it make you happy? Christmas present. Christ was, we celebrate worldwide Christ's birth on the 25th of December. But now I'm talking way beyond that. I'm talking about this very moment, right now. I'm talking about Christmas or Jesus Christ. Now, what is your relationship with him? He is ever present. When we choose to do things wrong, he is still present. He stands at the door and he knocks. Christmas present. Emmanuel, God with us. It's something to consider. I remember when I was 10 years old, somehow it all suddenly began to apply to me. I'd been taught in Sunday school. I knew about Jesus. I knew about church. And I knew about baptism. And finally, I went and asked to be baptized. I went and asked because I knew it was required. Because I knew Jesus was baptized. And I wanted to give my life to him. And I already knew that I needed him. Emmanuel, God with us. The kingdom of heaven at hand. Christ in this moment. Christ near. Christ present. John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. I think of this, that Christ was our life and light. What did I just say? Christ, I said Christ was. How should I say it? Christ is. Christ is the life and the light unto man. And I'm going to read, jump over to 17th verse, just to give a brief explanation of something that happened when Christ came, when he started his ministry. It says, for the law, this is verse 17 of John 1, for the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. And I'll go over to Matthew 22 just to emphasize it even more. The difference, there was a change in the law. Those that were the lawyers didn't like that. They had a system that made them powerful. And Jesus was teaching something new. So Matthew 22. I think it's still in here. I'll start with verse 34 of Matthew chapter 22. But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him and saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is likened to it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And I don't want to just move on from this without talking about it a bit. That last verse is very important. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. When we go about serving God, there's so many things that we feel responsible for, that we like to do. We can't ever walk away from these first two commandments. It's overarching. It covers all the law. The things that we do that are outside of these first two commandments, loving God with all our heart and loving our neighbor like ourselves, if that's not there also, we break the law. We break the law. I heard a sister one time, and she was talking about a subject that can be pretty sensitive. And she's passed on now, so I won't take credit, and I'll let her have the blame for what I'm going to say. She said, when somebody goes to help somebody who's overcome in a fault, somebody that's in sin. When they go to him, she said, unless they truly love him with all their heart, they don't have a right to go talk to him. And I at the time, that took me back a little bit. But as I consider these things, and I realize that loving God and loving our neighbor as ourselves is overarching. It has to be there. When we keep any commandment, when we do any living in this life, I think she was right. We have to be filled with this love for God. That's what he changed. That's what that emphasis that he brought anew. Love God and love everyone else. I have trouble keeping my notes on my phone. My phone slides down the podium, and so I can't keep it where I want it. So Christ is light and life to us. He brought grace and truth. And I've thought about God's grace, and sometimes we think about it in relation to maybe a little corner argument sometimes that we have about whether we're saved by works or whether we're saved by grace. That's not where I'm going. I'm just going to ask you, is God's grace in you? Is God's grace in you? Because that's what he brought, grace and truth. I'll go to Hebrews, the 4th chapter. I realize I'm reading a lot, but honestly, it's kind of neat that we record these now on live stream. When I preach a sermon, I would prefer you go back if you didn't get a chance to take notes. Study for yourself. Study for yourself. I don't want to say anything that's not true. I want you to study it too. Hebrews, 4th chapter. I'm going to start with verse 12 and read through 16. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intentions of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and open unto the eyes of him with whom we have to deal. And I'm not done reading. But when I say Christmas present, when I say Jesus Christ now and near, the kingdom of heaven at hand, consider this, that we are naked and open before him. There is nothing he doesn't see. He knows us. He knows what's going on in our heart. Now let's go on verse 14. See then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our profession, for we have not a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And I got to tell you, if I read that before I go and pray, it helps. It reminds me that there's nothing I'm going to bring up that he doesn't understand. There's nothing I'm going to ask that he doesn't fully already know what's going on in my heart. He knows the whole situation better than I do. He's there before I am. Isaiah 49. This just happens to be where we're studying right now in the phone church. This is the actual chapter we studied today. Isaiah 49. And I'm going to read verse 15. It says, can a woman forget her suckling child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee. Behold, I have graven thee on the palms of my hands. Thy walls are continually before me. Thy children shall make haste. Thy destroyers and they that made thee shall go forth of thee. Lift thine eyes round about, and behold, all these gathering themselves together and come to thee. As I live, saith the Lord, thou shalt surely clothe thee with them all and with an ornament, and bind them on thee as a bride doeth. It shakes me as a human being to think that I'm graven on the palms of Jesus' hand, that sacrifice hurt. The sacrifice he made in this earth was unto his death. He suffered unto death for me. It's easier for me to think for the whole world. But then I realized my own responsibility. It was for me. Third Nephi. And this is not a new reading, and you all already know. This is at a very tumultuous time that I'm about to read here. It was upon the crucifixion of Christ, and it was in this land, in the Americas. They'd just gone through 3 days of terrible storm and tempest and darkness that not even a fire could be kindled to give light. And I want to bring forth some of the words that he offered at that time. And it says that so many people were killed in this terrible, terrible time, in this tempest, in this darkness. And so it was a hard time for the people. And it said that it was the more righteous that survived. And when I say more righteous, I'm not saying of the righteous it was the most righteous. He actually says, he calls to him and tells him, repent and turn around. He's saying it was just the better part of the normal people that survived. So, fifth chapter, third book of Nephi. And I'm going to start reading with the ninth verse. Looks like I'm about on time. I'm just ready to wrap it up. Verse 9. And it came to pass, as they understood, they cast their eyes up again toward heaven, and behold, they saw a man descending out of heaven. And he was clothed in the white robe, and he came down and stood in the midst of them. And the eyes of the whole multitude were turned upon him, and they durst not open their mouths, even one to another, and wist not what it meant. for they thought it was an angel that appeared unto them. And it came to pass that he stretched forth his hand and spake unto the people, saying, Behold, I am Jesus Christ, of which the prophets testified should come into the world. And behold, I am the light and the life of the world. And I have drunk out of that bitter cup which the Father hath given me, and have glorified the Father in taking upon me the sins of the world, in the which I have suffered the will of the Father in all things from the beginning. And it came to pass, when Jesus had spoken these words, the whole multitude fell to the earth, for they remembered that it had been prophesied among them that Christ should shew himself unto them after his ascension into heaven. And it came to pass that Jesus spake unto them, saying, Arise and come forth unto me, that ye may thrust your hands into my side, and also that ye may feel the prints of the nails in my hands and in my feet, that they may know that I am the God of Israel and the God of the whole earth, and have been slain for the sins of the world. And it came to pass that the multitude went forth and thrust their hands into his side, and did feel the prints of the nails in his hands and in his feet. And this they did do, going forth one by one, until they had all gone forth, and did see with their eyes, and did feel with their hands, and did know of a surety, and did bear record that it was he of whom it had, that it was he of whom it was written by the prophets should come. And it came to pass that when they had all gone forth and had witnessed for themselves, they did cry out with one accord, saying, Hosanna, blessed be the name of the Most High God. And they did fall down at the feet of Jesus and did worship him. So the story was worldwide. And at the time, there was a reflection worldwide. Of who Jesus was when he was on this earth, when he was crucified. And it says that he actually created the world. When he was asked about Abraham, he said, Before Abraham was, I am. And he is there this very moment. And I want to leave you with a charge, something that he said on this same occasion. So this is the third book of Nephi. I'm still reading chapter 5. And I'm going to read verse 60 through 63. Verily, verily, I say unto you, I give unto you to be the salt of the earth. But if the salt shall lose its savor, wherewith shall the earth be salted? The salt shall be thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Verily, verily, I say unto you, I give unto you to be the light of this people. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Behold, do men light a candle and put it under a bushel? Nay, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light to all that are in the house. Therefore, let your light so shine before this people, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. I really want to leave you with that flavor, knowing that he is with you. Knowing that he sees you. We are literally open and naked before him. There's nothing he doesn't know. Nothing he doesn't see. Nothing he hasn't experienced or been tempted in. He understands. He understands. So he will be with you. Be salt and light. That's what he has charged us with. He gives to us to be salt and light among the people that we walk among. I had more scriptures, but I think I really said it. And the clock says, Jerry, you said it. I want to recognize, you know, Christmas, thinking clear back to when I was a kid, it's always been a really joyous time. It's fun. I like it. I love the music. I'm one who would keep the lights up all year. But let's keep the lights up all year. And I'm talking about what's going on in your heart. Be light, and to everybody around you, the light of God, as Jesus was. And I want to recognize, too, that Christmas isn't as joyous to everyone. It's a hard time. It's a hard time to those that have lost loved ones. It's a hard time for those that have gone through a divorce. It's a hard time for those that have that are alone. Reach out. If someone is alone this Christmas, has no one, I hope that's not true next Christmas. And I hope that somebody in this area that, because you were salt and light, they won't be alone next Christmas. So remember that Christ is this moment. He sees you, he understands this moment. Christmas is not just about history. It's about right now. I love you, and I hope that you will pour out your love on the world this year, on everyone you're around. Pray for me, and I'll pray for you.